Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Welcome to another edition of the Talking Metal Podcast, home of all things hard rock and heavy metal. I'm Mark Striegel, host and producer of this show since 2005. Now, let's get things started with the Talking Metal theme song, written by Rob Halford, Metal Mike, and Roy Z.
Hey, this is Mark Striegel. Today's guest, Doug Aldridge and John Corabi from the Dead Daisies. Of course, John Corabi, known for his work with The Scream, Union, and Motley Crue, in addition to the Dead Daisies. And Doug Aldridge has done great work with Dio and Whitesnake. And my co-host on today's episode, my wife is back, Emily Striegel. Hey, Emily.
What's up?
Emily, you are back with, I think, your third interview on this episode and your fourth, which will be on the very next episode. We're going to let people know about that, too. But your third interview, let's recap. You did Avatar at the Rock Derby. You did Jeff Tate over the phone / Skype. And now you went into the city and hung out with the guys in the Dead Daisies. Where did this interview take place?
Webster Hall. So I got to go to before the show and meet up with them at Webster Hall.
Cool. And I guess they've been on tour with Kiss. This was a night off, and they played at Webster Hall with two bands or one band?
They played with two bands, The Sweet Things and Pisser, both bands, NYC bands, both of which I love, especially Pisser. Pisser is one of my favorite bands of all time from New York City, for sure.
Absolutely. And Frank Ferrer from Guns N' Roses, of course, was playing with Pisser at this show. And also our friend Rob Bailey, who's been on the podcast before, and there was a very special guest, right?
Yeah, it was awesome. Richard Fortus actually came out to do a song. So he's been in bands with Eric J. Toast, the singer of Pisser, and of course Frank for years. They go back to a band called Honky Toast, which was a big, again, New York City band that I believe they were signed shortly. I'm not really sure, but they're just legendary in the New York City community. So to see all of them back together again, I was on cloud nine.
Cool. Well, right now we're going to get into some classic John Corabi before we hear the interview with John Corabi and Doug Aldridge. This is going way back to 1991, The Scream, I Believe in Me. Heard with some classic music by The Scream, a band that featured Bruce Bouillet and John Corabi. Bruce Bouillet, of course, from Racer X fame, great guitar player and great vocalist, songwriter John Corabi, who's on the show today. Right now, we're going to get into our interview with John Corabi of the Dead Daisies and Doug Aldridge of the Dead Daisies. Emily conducted this interview once again in New York City, and probably about 2 weeks ago at this point. And before we get into the interview, let's check out some music by the Dead Daisies. This is Make Some Noise, new Dead Daisies music here on Talking Metal, followed by Emily Striegel's interview with John Corabi and Doug Aldridge.
Everybody sing, get out of your chair. Let me hear you shout, put your hands in the air. All night.
So first of all, I want to say I've been listening to the album, which was released on August 5th. It's called Make Some Noise. It's really great driving hard rock record. Super solid, and I'm really excited to see you guys play tonight at Webster Hall in New York City. The Dead Daisies, you guys have been playing with Kiss a few dates for a while now here.
Actually, we started August 10th in Green Bay, and we've got two more shows. And then we're heading out to the West Coast to do a bunch of press and a video and another show like this at the Whiskey in Hollywood. So we're very excited about that.
And now you're doing Kiss Cruise too with them?
Yes, we're doing the Kiss Cruise. Well, we're doing the West Coast shows, go home for about a week, 10 days, something like that. And then we're going to Japan to do the Loud Festival.
Loud Park.
Yeah. Sorry. And then come home again for like a week. And then we're back to South Korea to do shows for the troops, USO shows. And then from there to Miami for the Kiss Cruise. And then right from the Kiss Cruise back to Europe for 2 months.
I love it. You guys are very busy. That's a good thing. It's good to be busy. But one, you know, I was super impressed. You guys won some major badass points for, this is kind of a day off for you because you were playing with Kiss last night and now you guys are playing here at Webster Hall. So how did this show in particular come about? How did the Whiskey show come about? You just wanted some FaceTime with your fans?
Well, if I could clarify, first of all, we never have a day off. So this is definitely not a union thing. Anyway, no, we, I think, yeah, they had a day off here and they just wanted to do, I don't know why, I think they just wanted to do a show.
Because we didn't have any New York proper shows, but we had spent some time here and wanted to, you know, there's a lot of press here like yourself and thought it'd be good to come here and represent. It's the first time, I think it's the first headline
show. We haven't done anything in New York, I don't think. So,
nope. I've been watching for you guys. So this is your third album, second album with you, right, John?
Yes.
And it's been less than a year since your last album. That was interesting to me that you guys turned around and did this so quickly. Tell me about that.
Well, the last record, if you heard the record, we had Dizzy and Richard in the band, and they went back to do the Guns N' Roses thing, and then it was weird. We kind of own our own imprint, our own label, and we have distribution through other labels. And the last company that we were working with was, it was a little to be desired, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we brought Doug into the fold for the new record, and we figured clean slate. We were doing a new label, new guitar player. Let's do a new record instead of just having him come in and learn a bunch of old stuff. We went in and we got together with Doug and Marty Fredrickson in January, and we knocked out a new album, and we've been going probably since sometime April. We were in Germany twice, came back, and we came here for a week of rehearsals, and we've been on tour since July 10th, something like that. We did all of Europe and then here with Kiss.
So. Amazing. Doug, how did you come into the fold? And then after you came into the fold, you guys started writing? Because you guys all have songwriting credits on the album.
Yes.
Yeah, we actually last year, I'd gotten a call from Marco, I think. It was Marco called and said that Richard had gotten in a motorcycle accident and wanted to see if I could fill in some dates. And unfortunately, I was already booked. But I said, you know, I called John and I was like, look, man, I'm sorry, I can't do it. You know, hopefully he's going to be okay. And hopefully, or you'll find somebody, whatever. And we just caught up for a minute. That was cool. And then I guess around that time, they decided they were going to be returning to tour with Guns N' Roses. And they called me back and said, what do you think? And I thought it was, you know, obviously working with, I'm friends with all these guys. And working with Brian is always great. I've known Marco since I was in Whitesnake. And I've known John since we were kids, really. We met. And I've always loved his singing and his guitar playing and songwriting and all that stuff. And I thought this would be awesome. So I talked with David for a while. We kind of talked about guitar styles. And it just was like, let's do it. Let's go for it, you know? Cool. It just felt good. So starting with a clean slate, like John said, is a great thing for someone coming in. You know, it makes it feel special.
And you have ownership of the songs. You have, you know, like it's like that's a good feeling, I'm sure, as an artist.
Yeah, it's not like we did gigs or anything with Doug. He just came into the studio, and I hadn't seen him since, you know, I literally picked him up at the hotel because I live in Nashville. So I picked him up at the hotel and I'm like, hey, dude, you know, welcome, whatever. So he wasn't quite in the fold. He was kind of in a crease. And then we did the record and now it's, you know, full fold isms. It's all good.
Very cool. So you recorded the entire record in Nashville. I seem to... Yeah. You did some rehearsals in New York.
We were doing some writing. We started writing in Nashville. We did a week there. We did a week here, and then we started recording back in Nashville.
Okay. Yeah.
And have you worked with the producer before?
Marty Fredrickson,
who, gosh, he's worked with everyone. He's worked with Aerosmith, Ozzy Osbourne, Motley Crue, to name a few. So what's your relationship? You both know him, but how did he come in with Dead Daddies?
Actually, Brian's, I think, the only one that actually worked with Marty prior to doing the record. I've known Marty since 1990. His band opened for The Scream when I was on tour.
Right.
And then... we didn't see each other a lot, but I was kind of watching his career. Like, he went from being in a band to, next thing I know, he was producing Brother Kane, and then went from there to Aerosmith and all the other stuff. And and then I moved to Nashville and I had no idea that he was there. And I just ran into him at a bar, and we've always been going, hey, dude, we got to work together, you know, blah, blah, blah. So this came up, and, I was excited about it. I think Marty's a great producer, but he's a great songwriter too. So having him in the process was cool, because if we got stumped on anything, whether it was melodies or lyrics or guitar parts, whatever, Marty was like a fresh set of ears and eyes to just kind of jump in and throw something on the table and then leave the room. You know what I mean?
Multi-talented too. He did some backing vocals on that record too, right?
Well, and I don't know if you know this, but Marty's got his own band called Loving Mary, who is out with Steven right now, Steven Tyler. Okay. They're backing Steven on his solo thing. So he's just a great player. He's a great guitar player, a great drummer, great songwriter, producer, and a great singer. You know what I mean? So it was good having him there to kind of reel us in, or at times, like, there were so many ideas going that he kind of separated us, and he just bounced back and forth from room to room. Like, David and I were in one room and him and Brian were in another, and he was just bouncing back and forth because we all just had so many ideas.
Yeah.
It was pretty crazy. So Marty's great.
Very cool. You mentioned The Scream, and I've always kind of wanted to ask you this, because when you did The Scream, you did an album right before you joined Motley Crue, is that correct?
Yeah, that's The Scream.
Yeah. So have you ever had this, like, what if scenario in your head? Like, what if I hadn't? Where would it have gone? Because you were only one record in with them.
Well, you know, yes, you can think about that stuff. But I honestly, man, it's like you could spend your whole life looking back and going, well, what if I did this different or did... And I don't really waste my time with it. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's kind of counterproductive, and it can be, you know, if you really dwell on it, it can be negative and you know, a downer. So I just kind of, like, everything that I'm doing, like, everything that I've done to this point has led me to this point. And to be honest, I was just telling some friends outside, like, it's weird, but who knew at 57 years old that I would have this resurgence in my career. And actually, I think I've done more press and videos and arena stadium shows and festivals than in any band that I've ever done. So I'm a bit of a late bloomer. You know what I mean? I didn't get laid the first time until I was like 33. Now you gotta bring that up.
But I have trouble believing that.
It's good to look back and figure out what mistakes I've made and try to not do them again. But I don't really dwell on it. I, like, everything I did, I was into, I was very proud of, and like, who knew I've just been given a weird map. You know, I joined the Scream. We had a great record. And who knew, though, when I was doing it, that a year and a half later, I'd get a call from Motley.
Yeah.
And then when I was in Motley, I thought we did a great record. And I was stoked about that. And I thought I was there. Who knew that Vince would come back?
Yeah.
You know, and so it's just been a series of bumps in the road. But right now we're doing awesome. The Daisy's record is charting in a bunch of different countries, and there's this huge influx of people that want to talk to all of us again. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I don't even think about it.
Very cool. Good attitude to have. And on the Motley front, I noticed a while back, like on Twitter, since, you know, I follow all you guys, there was a picture of you and Vince. Are you guys friends? Like, that kind of like took me off guard. I was like, oh, he's buddies with Vince.
You know what? Honestly, I've never had a problem with Vince at all. When I was in Motley and he came back, I mean, it was a bit of a kick in the balls. But at the same time, I got it. I understood why they were doing it.
Yeah.
The record company wasn't really supporting the record I did with them. So I understood that they were like, we want the four guys back together again.
Yep.
So I got it. So there was a period there for about, I don't know, maybe a month or so, that I was literally going to the studio with him every day and playing guitar and sitting with Vince, and because he kind of retracked some of the vocals that I had done, so I was just kind of helping, whatever. And you know, we sat and talked, and then he even said in an interview, he goes, I really wanted to dislike the guy, but he, you know, we sat and we bullshitted, and he was like, he was cool, and I'm fine with him. He's never done anything to me. So anytime I see Vince, we did a festival together in Nashville.
I did. And
I was walking by his bus and he called me on the bus and we just sat there and we talked about things. And we even talked about possibly doing a run together with his solo band and my solo band or the Daisies or something, whatever.
Very cool.
So I think it'd be fun.
Love hearing that. And are you on Mick Mars's solo album? Are you working on a song with him for the solo album? There's something going on with Mick's solo album and you, I believe. Yes? No? Can you talk to this?
I did two songs on that he actually wrote with somebody else, and he asked me to sing them. I went in and I changed some of the lyrics, whatever, and I sang the two songs, and he asked me to help him with his record, and I told him I'd love to, but at the same time, I don't want to, we're so busy, and then I have a solo band. I've got a record coming out, a live record in, you know, next couple months or something like that. And I just said, with all the touring and stuff I'm doing, I want to be able to, if I'm going to sit in a room with him, I want to be able to give him 100%. And at this point, I don't think that I could, you know. So I just said, if you can be patient, you know, we'll figure it out, you know, about it. That's all I can say at this point.
Cool. So, Doug, can we talk a little bit about what else you're doing on, you know, I know you're doing this full time right now, but like, so you were with Whitesnake for how many years?
For 12 years.
And do you still have a pretty good relationship with David Coverdale? I mean, I saw them in Jersey, gosh, like a month ago or so. They still seem to be going strong, you know, but I'm curious about your feelings there.
Yeah, no, I mean, we're not in touch that much, really. I think he was taken back a little bit when I left, but I just I was really proud of the work we did, and we started to work on the Purple record together, and I started helping him with demos and stuff, but I had gone through a relationship breakup, and I had gotten my son, and it was an amicable divorce. It was amicable, but I wanted my boy with me. And that meant that I needed to kind of be a little more flexible with the schedule. And David was like, I need you guys up here full time. And I knew if I was up there full time, because I'd always been up there full time for him. We spent 1,000 hours or thousands of hours, I don't know, writing songs and hanging together and just being creative. And then we did, you know, probably in the end, we wrote 30 songs together. And bunch of projects, DVDs, and but this one I couldn't commit to full time. I just needed a little flexibility, and he really wanted to go full bore on the Purple record. And So I just decided, you know what, I'd rather keep it amicable with him too and just kind of tap out at that point. But I'm really proud of what we did, and I loved working with him. I learned a lot. I've been really lucky with singers, you know, working with Coverdale, working with Dio, working with Krabi.
Yeah.
You know, it's good.
Very cool. How old's your son, out of curiosity?
He's 7. He just turned 7. He was 4 or 5 when it kind of went down, and it was the best decision I could have made. I mean, I felt bad for some of the fans that really liked that lineup, because it had been solid for a while, especially me and Reb together had been really solid. But it was, you know, family comes first always. Yeah.
That I agree totally. That's a choice you will never ever regret, you know, making. So kudos to you. So I want to know, and I'm going to let you guys relax a little bit, but I'm just curious. You guys are doing so much. What are you most looking forward to, like, that you have on your schedule for the next 6 months? Any country, any festival? Like, what do you have coming up that you're like, I'm really pumped?
I'm kind of pumped to go back to Japan with this lineup and do the Loud Park Festival. I've never been to South Korea, though, too, so it's going to be interesting to check it out. And, you know, I'm excited about that. But, you know, I like touring. You know, it's just weird. Like, at this point in my game, you know, I like getting out on the road and doing things. But we've been out for, you know, it's like 12 weeks now or 10 weeks, something like that. It's been a while.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm just kind of right now at this point, all I want to do is go home, recharge. Yeah. I want to open a jar of peanut butter, put some on my balls, have my dog lick off it, whatever. But I just, you know, just go home and have some fun and see my wife and my kids and just recharge the battery and then get back out again.
Yeah.
You know, so.
When's that happening? When are you going home to do the peanut butter thing?
Well, September 19th.
He knows the date. Okay. It's time.
Yeah.
So what are you most looking forward to, like, date-wise or country-wise?
We have a saying, some of us have a saying that everything's better in Japan. It's because it's just like everything runs on time, the food's amazing, yeah. the people are amazing, the culture, yeah. everything is awesome. I mean, they've got machines that pour the perfect beer in the airport for you.
Of course they do.
So that is always, that's always fun to go there. And then we're going to be going back to Europe too, and playing a lot of places that we didn't go already this year. So it's all good, you know, yeah. but I think I'm happy about getting to the country of California next week. That'll be good.
Yeah.
I don't want to ruin it for you. It's a week and a half. Can't get here soon enough.
Yeah, I think we're going to be in San Diego on a week from Sunday. So it's like 10 days, something like that. So it'll be good. We'll be, you know, kind of on our home turf, some of us, and family will be close. So that'll be good.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, guys, for sitting down with me and sitting down with Talking Metal. I know everyone's enjoying the album, and everyone's looking forward to seeing you out on the road.
It's going to be cool.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Emily.
Thank you.
Turn!
What you just heard was some classic Motley Crue, Power to the Music, that features John Corabi on lead vocals. He did that one self-titled record with Motley Crue. He's just had an amazing career, and thanks for catching up with John and Doug Aldridge in New York City, Emily.
They were so much fun to talk to. I really had a blast talking with them. And then to be witness to such an amazing show. It was like a hot, sweaty rock and roll show. It was so much fun. So I really was grateful to be there.
And to round things off, we're going to hear some Doug Aldridge. This is just a great song that he did with Whitesnake from 2008 off the Good to Be Bad album. This is called Best Years, written by Doug Aldridge and David Coverdale. Thanks for listening, guys.